Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. Presented by Crop Metcalf, they are the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. You looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Visit CropMetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Pickle, Johnny Cake Sawville, and Jason Bishop. That's the foursome. We're going to talk a little college football in 20 minutes with Chris Doering from the SEC Network. But right now, as we do every morning at this time, we hit the skins and talk about the Washington football team.
Oh, you're bringing back the old skins.
Sad HDTR. There it is.
I thought we phase it out by midweek.
Yeah, that's true, right? I thought we said by Wednesday. We got to start feeling optimistic.
Well,
thinking about
ahead.
Cleveland.
Well, we had two guests in the 7 o'clock hour on Monday and Tuesday.
So you didn't get a chance to play it?
So there was no opportunity to play it. So,
well, who wants to hear it? Just you. You're
I don't
the only
want
one.
I don't want to hear it.
But yes, it's tradition, though. It's tradition.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
If they look like poo, you got to play the poo song.
So our friends at...
You got to take the good with the bad, my friend.
Got to give credit where credit is due. Our friends at Hogs Haven did a little compilation of the power rankings. We went through this last week. And, you know, the Washington football team was... kind of in some of these rankings, they were in like the low teens, you know, maybe early 20s, that sort of thing, after their win in week one. And you were thinking, okay, maybe they've got something here. Well, after the loss, they're starting to go in the other direction again. Sporting News last week had them at 16, now they're at 18. The New York Post had them at 14, now they're at 18. Let me see. Bleacher Report had them at 19. Now they're at 21. Washington Post had them at 21. Now they're at 23. Pro Football Talk, either Florio or one of his guys, has them. They went up for Pro Football Talk. They were 24 last week. He's got them at 23 this week.
Really?
In ESPN.
That's weird.
They actually went up one slot with that lackluster performance. They were 24 last week.
Who are the two teams behind them?
I don't know.
The Jets have got to be 32 in pretty much everybody's power rankings, right?
Yeah, Giants have to be down there. Denver's got to be down there.
Okay.
The lowest ranking, shocker, Pete Prisco at CBS, he still got them at 28. Yeah. They haven't budged.
I think that's accurate, by the way.
Might be. Yahoo's got them at 30th. Yardbarker has also got them at 30th.
Yardbarker's still a thing in 2020?
Yeah.
So who knew?
It looks like their highest ranking right now. For some reason, Sporting News, they must love that defense in Chase Young because they've got them at 18. Most everybody else has them in the mid to low 20s. The lowest of anybody that you've heard of is Yahoo and Yardbarker. And then there's a site, Jason may know it, called Odds Shark. Yep. They have them at 32.
I've used that site before.
Odds Shark, yep.
They have them at 32, dead last.
Ooh,
wow.
I mean,
there are some 0-2 teams that you know are probably just better. I mean, Houston, you would assume that's a better team than Washington, right? Atlanta, just because they can score, probably a better team.
I don't know. Won this past week. They shouldn't be 0-2.
Yeah. You know, other than that, I mean, the Vikings were so bad this past week.
You can't have the Eagles ahead of them because
you already
beat them.
Yeah. I get it.
Can't have that.
I'd probably put the Giants below them, too.
What about the Vikings?
The Lions should be
bad.
Below them. Yeah, the Lions are bad. The Vikings were a playoff team a year ago, and people expected them to be back in the playoffs.
All right, but what
are
they right now?
They're
0-2.
I
understand.
They're
poopy.
They've
been bad, but people believe they've got talent and will probably turn it around.
I don't know.
Well, I'm not
sure they will.
They've got the Titans coming in this weekend, and I would expect Derrick Henry. Now,
people were expecting a big game out of him against Jacksonville. It didn't really happen. It might happen against that Vikings defense.
Dolphins, Jets, yeah, I mean, just on paper, you'd think that the Washington's better than those teams. But who knows? In
terms of point differential, we're markedly better than Minnesota, you know?
Well, Minnesota's awful.
We're also markedly better in differential with Cleveland. Cleveland's
this week's opponent.
Yes. Cleveland's minus 27 in their two games. They've only scored
because they got boat raced by Baltimore.
They got killed again. Yeah.
All right. It is what it is. Just telling you.
But, I mean, do you think that Washington could put up 35 in a game?
I mean, it's hard to imagine that right now. Sure.
The answer's no.
Well, I think they can. So hold on. Do you want to make a season long bet?
Sure.
All right, hold on. I got to look at what they did last year.
Yes, I would say
scoring last year.
I want to see if they ever had one like that.
They might have had one with Case Keenum, not with Dwayne Haskins.
Well, yeah, when they played the Eagles in Week One, they put up in the 30s. I think last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a long time ago.
Right.
Right.
But didn't they put up high 20s against the Eagles? Maybe low 30s late in the year.
Yes.
Let me see. So, yeah, they had 27 against Philly. They had 21 against Dallas.
EBI might make that bet on this condition.
They had 29 against Carolina. Go ahead.
The defense is going to score at some point. So maybe they have a game where they score like 28, and then the defense chips in with seven, gets you to your number.
I mean, last year against the Giants at 35.
They won't score for a dollar. Why not?
Right.
Let's go. Let's do this.
All right. So we talked about some of Ron Rivera's comments yesterday, and I don't know. I thought it's still worth discussing. They think maybe that they're asking the players to do too much, and specifically, I guess they had a long meeting, Rivera and Scott Turner, where they're trying to look at the offense, they're trying to get on the same page, and then they're also kind of perplexed trying to figure out how to settle down Haskins. They like what they see in the second half, where they say he kind of chills out a little bit. The good news is, you know, they say he gets too hyped early in the games, but they say he's making the right reads and he's making good decisions. But he's just going through everything too quickly and not delivering a good ball early on. But then they say as he settles in, you know, then he's doing the things that they want. So does that give you some hope that if they could find a way to kind of calm him down? Supposedly, the staff last year noticed that Haskins got so hyped early on that he kind of struggled a little bit.
I don't know how easy those things are to correct. I am encouraged that they say that Haskins is making the right reads.
Right,
that's
a big
thing. He's not lost in the sauce, that he's at least throwing to the right guy. But, I mean, it's been 2 years of him throwing over the top of guys.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, remember, like when RG3 was here, no disrespect, I mean, he gave us our best year in 20 years. But they had to cut off half the field, remember? They said it just would make him read half the field.
Sure.
And whatever. There's none of those limitations, it seems like, with Haskins. He can make the reads. He's just got to settle in and just take that extra half second to plant his feet and deliver a good ball. So I think there is some hope there. I'm not willing to write him off like our guest yesterday. Was it Austin Gale?
Yeah.
Austin Gale decided yesterday that it's basically the end of an era. That they're going to be quarterback shopping in 2021.
Well, he's probably not the only one who feels that way.
I just don't know. When you're inaccurate, I kind of do tend to side with Austin Gale. When you're inaccurate kind of throughout your career, how easy is it to correct it? So now the coaching staff is saying, well, he's hurrying up. But it seems like he's accurate in the quick decisions. You know, we went through those statistics where he gets rid of the ball in under 2 seconds, which are those quick three-step drops, slants to Terry McLaurin. He's accurate. It's when he sits back there and he's got to kind of think about things that he seems to be inaccurate.
Right, but there are guys, because I remember, I don't know if it was Cam. It might have been Cam that I was looking at. Yeah, I mean, so far in two games, Cam is completing 71% of his passes with the Patriots. They're using them smartly or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they're using passes close to the line of scrimmage. They're playing to his strengths.
Whereas he's been, his lifetime completion percentage is in the 50s.
I'll tell you this, though. You can say that he's completing short passes. I haven't looked at his air yards. I just know watching that game against Seattle, and Drab can speak to this, he had some, in the last drive at least, some really nice downfield throws.
I'm not saying he can't go downfield. I'm saying the bulk of what he's completing is around the line of scrimmage. I know he had like at least one long dime to Edelman, but yeah. The bulk of his strength right now is in the short passing game.
But that's what's but in that's vogue fine. In the league, too, sure, by yeah. the way.
And that's Everyone's what they're designing. That. That's yeah. what they're designing for him. So. But if he's a threat to run, that's a whole other weapon.
Right.
That they certainly didn't have in the last 20 years.
That's what Gale's point is with Haskins, that you have other guys that aren't particularly accurate, even through in Lamar Jackson's name. Everybody loves Lamar, but the reason what makes him special are his legs. And the same thing with Cam. You know, that if Haskins just, say, is as accurate as Jackson, but he doesn't have that elusiveness, then what do you have, really?
But Haskins isn't slow. There are opportunities for him to bounce and go and get 7, 8, 10 yards.
Not a complete lead foot.
He's got to at least try that.
Yeah. I just don't like that option. I like the read option. I think that's a nice play. But that old traditional college option, no. They need to take that out of the play.
Oh, yeah, never work.
My opinion. I don't know. I didn't realize this defensively, just seeing this. Did you know who's tied with T.J. Watt for the NFL lead in sacks right now?
I'm assuming it's Chase Young.
Chase Young, yeah.
With what, three?
Two and a half.
And, of course, the Washington football team leads the NFL. Well, I'm reading a story here from the Cleveland.com. They've got them. They're calling them the Redskins in the story. The Washington football team leads the NFL with 11 sacks. They've got the most in the NFL.
Yeah, so, well, they had eight.
They had eight in week one. They had three against Kyler Murray. It looks like the Browns media is well aware that this is going to be, they think, a bigger challenge than the Bengals was for them, I guess, on that Thursday night game.
Yeah, Baker was sacked twice in the opener against the Ravens. Zero times against the Bengals. So
Washington has recorded three interceptions, Cakes, and we have three forced fumbles. And apparently, Baker has the NFL's longest interception streak. He's thrown an interception in eight straight games.
They're going to have an opportunity, certainly, to get some turnovers, but that Cleveland team will take some shots downfield, and that's an area where Washington has struggled. They're dead last in allowing the longest pass plays in the NFL. Yeah. Dead last.
Well, that's because they've given up, what, one in each week, right? One big
gave
one?
Gave up a 57-yard bomb to Carson Wentz and a 55-yard bomb
Kirk.
From Kyler Murray.
That's when, yeah. like, Apke looks like he just gets sucked up, you know, into the run-stopping mode, and then he realizes, oh, they're
you
going.
You better get back there.
Is that when Isabella just ran right by him?
Yeah,
yes.
That was yeah. week two, well, yeah. Yeah.
So just make you shake your head a little bit.
I haven't seen who they brought in this week. I know that they called up Cam Sims to the active roster. Apparently, I didn't know this, so they have expanded the rules, right, for mm-hmm. the practice squad, et cetera. You can have like four guys that you can call up. But there are some stipulations with it, including if they call you up two consecutive times – from the practice squad, they have to name you to the active roster or they have to release you. So they named him to the active roster. And, look, Cam has not had an impact in the passing game in the 2 years that he's been here. But you could see, if you're paying attention to teams, that he's one of the first guys down there on coverage every time.
Yeah.
So he's getting a lot of special teams run. I think maybe he had something like 16 snaps on special teams in the first week and he got like 20. In the second week. So he's getting a lot of action.
Are you worried as a fan of the Washington football team that Steven Sims has already muffed two out of his seven punts?
No, but I guess that's something to be concerned about. Certainly, I'll
say
this.
2 for 7 is a terrible percentage.
Right. I'll say this. I just don't think he's that great at it.
Right.
I love Steven Sims, but I think people get confused. He's not super fast. He's quick. The reason why he went undrafted is because he doesn't run a super fast 40, but he is quick. He's quicker than he is fast.
He looks like he does.
He just doesn't. And
he just looks like in a game when he gets the ball in open space, he looks like he's fast.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that he had, you know what, he's nothing special returning punts. I'd rather just see him implement him into the passing game.
All right, coming up next, we're going to switch gears and talk some college football. Chris Doering from the SEC Network will join us here on the Junkies.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
And we are live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to check us out on TV? Join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is our pal Chris Doering, now college football analyst for the SEC Network and SiriusXM. What's up, Chris?
Good morning. How you guys doing? Hey,
Chris, when did you know when you were playing, when did you know you were going to get in broadcasting?
Well, I don't know exactly, man. I was thinking about that the other day. I got my degree from the College of Journalism at the University of Florida, but I had to go the production route because we didn't have the ability to do the out-of-class requirements for the news side of things. So, I mean, I think I was inclined to do that. I think, as you guys know, Chris Collinsworth was one of my idols, and I kind of followed in his footsteps in the football side of things, and then, you know, I think I had an interest because of that and what he was doing in his post-playing days. So I'm not exactly sure, but I definitely know that I had some interest in college for sure.
By the way, Collinsworth's son looks and talks just like him.
Yes.
They sound identical.
Identical. Crazy. I couldn't tell the difference until I saw his face.
It's wild, man.
He's pretty good, too.
Hey, Chris. Proof that life comes at you really fast. I'm on your Twitter at Chris Doering, and in late August, you posted a picture, a side by side of you in your Florida days holding like a toddler. And then I guess 25 years later, you're on a podcast with the toddler that you're holding. How weird was that? Where you look back on it on your playing days at Florida, and you're like, man, there's a lot of time that's gone by at this point.
It was weird and sad at the same time. You know, this guy, they have me on this podcast, this Florida podcast, and my man whips out the picture of me holding him in 1995 as a little infant. You know, it was crazy to think that that much time has passed, and even more crazy to think about people that I'm going on these shows with now were little babies and fans. But it's cool at the same time, you know, the chance to have an influence over people that are now, you know, full-grown Gator fans and the memories that they share with me from when they were younger is kind of neat as well.
So CD, I think the last time we spoke to you, it was probably JP and I when we were doing the Saturday shows.
Yeah.
All right, so this was probably, what do you think, JP, early July?
Maybe even further back than that.
Yeah, and I know that you were skeptical on the SEC, certainly, and college football in general getting underway. We have. Now, we've had some postponements. We've had some. Now, you got the Big Ten back, right? Mm-hmm. So you got some of these other conferences that are Mountain West thinking about it. So are you surprised right now, certainly with the Big Ten now coming back, are you surprised that they're playing, even though most of the stadiums are empty?
Yeah, it's definitely been a unique path to where we are right now, the fact that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten called things off and then reversed course. But, you know, I give a lot of credit to Commissioner Sankey, obviously. I'm a little biased with my ties to the SEC, but I thought that he's done a nice job of playing this extremely well, including pushing the season back to the 26th of September, just in an effort to provide more time and to gather more data. I mean, think about the things that have allowed the Pac-12 and the Big Ten to come back and play were the advancements in technology, the rapid testing, the availability of inexpensive saliva tests, the fact that they can test on a daily basis and feel more confident about putting players together. Those things have come along just in the period of the time that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 called things off and now reverse course. So buying time helped in that direction. It also helped in watching what the NFL was doing and seeing what some of these other smaller schools were doing and how they were able to play and give more confidence to being able to meet and not have positive tests afterwards. So I think that's been the key, and I'm really glad, you know, thinking about the Big 12 and what they did. I think if the Big 12 would have gone the way of the Big 10 and the Pac-12, we may not be having these conversations right now. So them deciding to continue to forge ahead with the ACC and the SEC was key as well.
You may not know the answer to this, but out of the seven games this weekend, seven. So Ole Miss, Auburn, LSU, Arkansas, Mizzou, A&M, and South Carolina all hosting. How many of those seven stadiums are allowing fans? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. Okay. You know, I know here in Gainesville, Florida's allowing 20%, so they're looking at about a 17,000 person capacity.
Okay.
I think in Baton Rouge, it's 26,000. I think is what they're having there. So I believe the majority of the schools in the SEC are having people, and that number is somewhere around 20% of capacity. But I am interested to see, you know, a couple things, one of which has to do with the crowd noise that's being piped in. I know the SEC has been watching and seeing how other schools have done it, how they're maybe designing a uniform decibel level. Mm-hmm. That's the max that you can have. And then the electronic whistle has been an issue as well. I don't know how much you guys have paid attention to that.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's annoying, and it's unsafe to see guys stopping that hear the whistle and other guys hitting the guys that have stopped. So I know that the SEC is paying attention to how they can resolve that issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, did Deion Sanders contact you about a coaching position? Because apparently there are all kinds of guys denying that they're coaching with Deion.
I don't think I have the swag or the name recognition to be on his staff. Man, that is a star-studded group that's reportedly assisting Deion Sanders. But I'm interested to see how long it takes for those guys to realize that recruiting's not just as easy as sending the text or calling and having that name recognition carry you all the way to signing day.
But didn't they all deny it? Hasn't, like, Warren Sapp denied it?
I think so, man. I'm not sure what's going on. It's definitely a weird situation, even from the introduction of Deion to the fact that he has very little coaching experience. But I guess, you know, that's a good place to meld the name recognition and the fact that, you know, he can bring attention to a place like Jackson State that I think a lot of other coaches wouldn't be able to.
All right, so CD, obviously when you talk SEC, you got to talk about Bama. We'll start with them. You kind of feel sorry for Mizzou that's their opener.
Yeah.
Even though they're at home, but and obviously
they lose some players to COVID too.
They had 12 guys down last week. Eli Drinkwitz said that they were going to be without. I don't know. I think that number may have mitigated a little bit, but still, yeah, you're right. I mean, a new coaching staff, no spring practice, by the way, you got to open up against the team that I think a lot of people feel is going to win the SEC championship this year. Yeah. Alabama, you know, was the beneficiary of some silver lining from last year's negatives. Remember, at the beginning of the year, they lost two linebackers in Joshua McMillan and Dylan Moses for the season. Mm-hmm. Had to play freshmen in those spots. Also played a couple other freshmen in the front seven. Those guys now have experience and come back in addition to having McMillan and Dylan Moses back. So that'll be key. And then on the offensive side, losing Tua was brutal last year for them. But getting Mac Jones some experience where he played well and develop confidence not only for himself but his teammates in him as the leader, I think, is one of the key things heading into this year as well.
Now, you've got Mac Jones, and you've got some studs. You've got speed on the outside with Waddle and Smith. All right, they're legit. You know, probably both first-round picks. You've got a really good, experienced running back in Harris coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Robinson, experienced. But you also have Bryce Young, and I assume he's second on the depth chart behind Jones. I don't know if you've heard anything different, but if Jones struggles early, do you think that Saban would turn to a stud freshman like that? Or do you think it's Jones' position and it's safe?
That doesn't sound anything near familiar, does it? Oh, yeah, it does, with Jalen Hurts and Tua taking over. I mean, he's shown it before. He's not afraid to go to a freshman if he has to in a huge game. So I don't see why you wouldn't see Bryce Young if, in fact, the offense and Jones did not click on all beats. And to that, this is going to be a weird year. With this season not counting against eligibility, I mean, you're going to see freshmen playing a lot more, if for nothing else, to provide depth and to get experience for those freshmen. So I do think we'll see Bryce Young throughout the season. I think at the same time, you'd like to be able to create one guy that's going to be your starter that you can look to as a leader. So I do think Mac Jones will get a long leash, but I expect to see Young at some point.
Where is he rated compared to those other two guys? Do you know? I mean, is he about the same type of player? Does he have the arm, the accuracy? What have you heard about him?
Oh, Bryce Young? Yeah. He was one of the top quarterback recruits coming out of high school last year. And early enrollee that was obviously planning on getting some spring practice time and some off-season work together with his teammates to in an effort to win that starting job. I do think from what I've heard and some of the beat writers that we've had on our show, it has not been as close of a competition, and at some point Bryce Young missed a little bit of time. It was not clarified as to why he missed time. But I think for those reasons, you're seeing Mac Jones solidly at the number one quarterback spot right now.
Gotcha. We're joined by Chris Doering from the SEC Network. They have a triple header this weekend, Kentucky at Auburn. The late tilt is Tennessee at South Carolina. I want to touch on the middle of that sandwich there. Georgia goes to Arkansas. That's your 4 p.m. kick. Just a brutal opener for the Hogs. 4-20 the last two seasons. They have to welcome in, you know, a top five team in Georgia. That one could get ugly early.
They're on a 19-game SEC losing streak as well, so that does not bode well for the Hogs and Sam Pittman in his debut in Fayetteville.
Right.
Let's be honest. I mean, typically in the SEC, what you see are early season matchups, beginning of the year with Group of Five or FCS teams, a chance to kind of acclimate. This is not the case this year with the SEC-only schedule, but it's as close to that as you can possibly get with Arkansas being the first team on the schedule for Georgia. And I believe they need it. I mean, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered about this Georgia team. Their defense is going to be salty, but offensively, still don't know who the quarterback's going to be. JT Daniels has not been cleared from his knee injury. You're trying to figure out who the complementary pass receivers are going to be to George Pickens. The offensive line was decimated with graduations and transfers. As we know, Cade Mays left and now got immediate eligibility at Tennessee, at least from the NCAA, waiting on the SEC at this point in time. But there's a lot of things that we need to figure out, including who this offense is going to be. Todd Monken takes over at the OC position. Not much time together with the players during the spring and off season. So these kids and conversely the coaches, I think there's a lot to figure out about personnel and how to utilize guys. And they get, I think they have the toughest schedule when it comes to successive games in the SEC. After Arkansas, they got to play against Auburn. They play against Alabama or the Tennessee, Alabama, and Kentucky in successive weeks. And I think we're splitting hairs when we're talking about how difficult the schedule is in the SEC this year. But I think it comes down to who the teams are and what order in succession you play them. I think that's going to be a tough run, especially early in the year with all these questions we have about them. So Arkansas being on the schedule for week one is good for Georgia.
Yeah, and Pittman's got a transfer in Felipe Franks, who was at Florida. Now, he's not great, but he's experienced. They also have the running back that transferred in Boyd. What game really intrigues you? By the way, Georgia in that game laying 26.5, Bama laying 27. Maybe 27.5. But what matchup really intrigues you out of the seven?
Let me give you the lock of the weekend for me, my friend. And the game that intrigues me the most is Kentucky going to Jordan-Hare to play against Auburn. I'm not sold on Auburn. I am definitely sold on Kentucky, though. And if you look at the things I think that make up a team that's going to be able to have success this year, particularly in the early season, it's continuity on the coaching staff and it's experience and leadership on the field. And Kentucky has both of those. Largely everybody back on the staff, same offensive and defensive systems they'll be utilizing. You get Terry Wilson back at the quarterback position after he went down with his injury last year and last September. Around him, they have what I think is the best offensive line, and they're going up against a defensive front for Auburn that lost Marlon Davidson and Derrick Brown, so they've got some production to replace there. I think Kentucky has one of the best offensive lines in the country. I think they're going to be able to impose their will, and it's not going to be the imposing situation with Auburn not having the full repertoire of fans in the stadium. Gus Malzahn requested that they try to get as many students in the stadium as they possibly could, as their attendance capacity will allow, to try to create an intimidating environment, but I really believe that Kentucky's not only going to cover, I think they're getting 7.5 points down from like 10.5, but I believe they win the game outright.
Really?
Chris, I know it's
I know it's not the SEC, but just your quick opinion on the U. Are they back?
They look to be back, don't they? I mean, I'm not a U fan by any means. In fact, I'm probably the opposite of that. But it's more fun when Miami and certainly when Florida State are good. Miami with De'Aaron King looks like they have a totally different offense. Lashley, the offensive coordinator, has been in the SEC in the recent past, so we know a lot about him. That offense looked fun. They played with great tempo. Louisville, for some reason, decided not to cover two receivers on successive plays and gave up two 75-yard touchdowns in back-to-back possessions. But I do think a lot of that was caused by some of the speed and motions and stuff that Miami was utilizing. They created some confusion, and that allowed a couple guys to get open. So I do think that it's much more the case in Coral Gables than it is in Tallahassee right now, and I expect Florida State to get beat the hell down this weekend.
So yeah, me too. So you mentioned the some guys making their debut, Sam Pittman in Arkansas, Drinkowitz. There's also a couple of bigger name new coaches in the conference, and we've talked about it. And I know you're intrigued. You obviously got Leach at Mississippi State, and you got Kiffin at Ole Miss. So what are your thoughts on that? Ole Miss is going to open up against Florida. Florida should be really good. They're 5 in the polls.
Yeah.
All right, so they're loaded. And yeah, Mississippi State's got to go down to Baton Rouge. Now, Baton Rouge lost a lot of guys to guys opting out. Obviously a bunch of guys going pro. So they're going to be a different look, too, and some controversy with that team in the offseason. So what intrigues you about those two coaching situations and those games?
Well, first of all, being a Florida guy, I am very grateful that the Gators drew Ole Miss in week one and not week 8, 9, or 10, because I think this is a team that's going to get better and better. There's a lot of talent, a lot of young talent that got a chance to play last year under Matt Luke, and now Lane Kiffin inherits that experience, and we know he's one of the most creative offensive minds in the game. He's been experienced as a head coach in the SEC at Tennessee in the past, so I think his learning curve, his acclimation is going to be the shortest of all the new coaches. I do think it's going to take a little bit of time in Starkville for Mike Leach to figure out his personnel, and for KJ Costello, the transfer from Stanford, coming in and taking over, not having the benefit of going through spring practice to learn and get comfortable in that Mike Leach offense. But you're right, they do face an LSU team that was completely retooled after losing so much talent to the draft and graduation last year. LSU in their own right has to figure some things out, including not only who's going to fill the shoes of Joe Burrow, but I think more importantly, who's going to fill the shoes of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, this is a guy that played 93% of the offensive snaps last year for LSU. He does it all, and I don't think there's a running back on that roster that can do it the way that Edwards-Helaire did.
Yeah. Chris, always appreciate the time.
You're the best, bro.
Hey, appreciate you guys, man.
Thank you, man.
Great talk.
I'm going to text you. I'm going to text you for some more fatties in the SEC. I got more questions about that.
Do it. No problem. See you guys.
Of course.
All right, buddy.
Good to talk to you, man.
Does he gamble? Does Chris gamble too?
I know he likes blackjack. I'm not sure how much he bets on sports, but I assume he's got the.
If you like blackjack, you're probably you're degenerating it up somewhere else.
He probably likes to throw it around a little bit.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to go around the NFL with the Junkies Blitz. But first, let me tell you about Government AG Solutions, which, of course, I clicked on it and it just went away.
Haven't you memorized it by now?
Uh-oh. When it comes to complex IT integration, no one does it better than Software AG Government Solutions. Software AG's WebMethods is the world's most capable integration platform. The mandate for government is clear: integration and modernization of IT. Learn why the most innovative government agencies turn to Software AG to tackle their toughest integration challenges. Complex IT simplified. Visit softwareaggov.com. That's softwareaggov.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. Remember, we'll hook up with Mike Rizzo, the Nats GM and president of baseball operations, at 9 o'clock as we go in the clubhouse. It's a game show Wednesday. We'll play Junkie Shootout coming up at 9:20. Your chance to win a great prize. But right now, we'll go around the NFL with the Junkies Blitz. I'm going to start with Cake's beloved Raiders.
Ooh.
Just win, baby.
Of course, are now 2-0. In Vegas. A couple of interesting stories with the Raiders. First of all, did John Gruden have coronavirus or not? Remember,
yes,
they tripped his team with kind of a faux coronavirus story several weeks ago, which we talked about, which backfired, where they did some sort of a Zoom call, and they wanted to see how guys reacted to the coronavirus news, and it turned out it was all a hoax. But now he's saying that he actually had it.
Yeah. Mm. He's pissed off that people were saying that it was a hoax. He said, no, he had it. It was an ordeal. But, yeah.
No, but the Zoom thing was a hoax.
Yeah, I don't know about that part. All I know is he said he had it. He got it in July, right before training camp or whatever.
Right.
And he said it was, you know, sucked. But, he didn't want to make a big deal about it, but he did have it. And he's pissed that people think that he was faking it.
Right.
So
it's unclear, yeah, whether that Zoom call thing was a hoax, whether that's a separate deal. Like, my interpretation was, all right, they did the Zoom thing. I forgot exactly what they did, where they tried to dupe the players for a while, and it kind of backfired. But I don't think he had the coronavirus then. I think he maybe had coronavirus, like, as separate from that.
Right.
Right. Which is also interesting, then, since he was one of the coaches fined for not wearing the mask.
Right.
Yeah. See, what happens when you taught the coronavirus? Getcha.
The thing I don't understand about that, the mask stuff in the NFL, is, I mean, people should wear masks if they want to wear masks and where they should, obviously. But these guys are tested every day. It seems superfluous, gratuitous. I don't understand why.
But I don't know that all of the referees and everything are tested.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, they've got to be tested.
I'm pretty sure. Dude, because I know producers.
Differently.
They're
our
tested.
Old producer, Lisa, was when she was doing her NFL stuff, she was tested every single day.
Well, clearly the NFL just wants to send a message. So,
well, those are big fines. $250K is a big check.
Yeah, it's a big check. Now, Gruden's making a boatload of cash.
No, I know, but I'm saying, you think he wants to write that check?
No, but he actually...
I'm not saying he can't afford it, but that's a big number.
I think his is only $100K. The team then gets fined the
$250K. Yes.
Nobody wants to be docked $100K.
All right, so it's $100K.
He kind of slept it off. He was like, yeah, if I have a fine, I'll pay it.
Yeah,
I
mean, he's making $10 million a year.
I know.
You think he cares about $100K fine?
Yes, $100,000 is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Everybody cares.
You think Kyle Shanahan doesn't care about $100,000?
Of course he does.
They all do, but he blew it off pretty quickly.
They have piles of money. They don't know what to do with all of their money.
In fact, oftentimes the owners will pay these guys fines. Yeah. So who knows?
Well, maybe they did. I'm just saying. That's a big number. And it's just funny that both of those guys were fined, and Peyton and Gruden, and both of them had it.
Right.
It's just funny.
Well, getting to the play on the field regarding the Raiders, there was a lot of talk heading into the season that Derek Carr was a quarterback who could get replaced. They brought in Marcus Mariota, and that his head coach, John Gruden, didn't love him. But now... the Raiders quarterback, who says he's tired of all the talk, is getting ridiculous support from Gruden, who says this guy's a great quarterback.
Well,
I don't know.
He's a hyper.
Surrounding him with better players, and once our defense, I think, started playing to his potential, he can be even better. But here's my question. If you look at the AFC, everybody thinks it's going to come down to the Chiefs and the Ravens, and they're playing each other this week. And that would probably be everybody's matchup in the AFC Championship. But if you had to pick a sneaky team who could knock off either the Ravens or the Chiefs this year, would you go with the Raiders, who are off to the 2-0 start? Would you go with the Steelers or the Bills, also 2-0? Who do you like, Cakes, out of those three?
Ooh. Of those
everybody
three,
likes the Ravens and the Chiefs. That's easy.
Of those three, if I had to pick one, and he has to stay on the heater that he's been on, I would pick the Bills if Josh Allen can keep playing. Now, he's not going to keep scorching every team like he has in the first 2 weeks, but if he can limit the turnovers, limit the overthrows, and be efficient running that offense, I would pick the Bills.
Bills yeah, probably pick the Bills, too. I'll say this. The Raiders game this week is huge because if they go into New England and win, they're 3-0. Okay, yeah. They're 6.5-point dogs in this game. I'm not sure they're going to win. I'm just saying if they do, they're 3-0, and that's a great start. Their percentages go way up to make the playoffs. And then the Pats would be 1-2.
And Bills have a big one, too. Bills have to play the Rams and the Bills' first two opponents, I mean, the Jets and the Dolphins. This is a step up in competition.
So you like the Bills. I put them at number 5 in my JPPP. I like the Steelers over the Bills. Two reasons. Number one, I believe in Big Ben over Josh Allen. All right, Josh Allen may be a great quarterback.
I'm with you there,
maybe
brother.
He's going to be a future Hall of Famer. But then also, if you look at the numbers, and it's only through 2 games, so it's early. They got the number 2 defense in the league.
Yeah.
The Steelers got the number 2 defense in the league.
Yeah, but they played Jones and Drew Lock slash Driscoll. I mean, come on.
I said it's early.
Let's see what happens when they play the Texans and then they play the Titans in Tennessee. They got some tough matchups coming up.
But really, for me, it comes down to I believe in Big Ben over Josh Allen.
You didn't even mention Tennessee.
No, I didn't. You know what? Disrespect them.
You disrespect them.
They're actually probably shouldn't. Good. I mean, they were in the AFC title game last year.
Yeah,
probably shouldn't. Legit.
Probably shouldn't at all. A couple other stories. Cam Newton talking about respect. He says he's not worried about the money, and he's not really worried about getting an extension right now, but he does believe he should be respected. Isn't that usually a synonym for pay me?
Yeah, but I think I understand what he's saying. He's not thinking about the money. He's got money. He's not thinking about the money. I mean, he wants to make a boatload of money, believe me, but that's not what's driving him right now. I think he wants to reestablish himself. That guy was humble, dude. He was flat out released. And there weren't really that many options, it appeared, for him to be a starting quarterback in the league. Luckily for him, he might have ended up in the perfect spot.
He was also asked about the last play against Seattle. And he goes, we ran the play 4 times, and it's not my job to go back and forth on what the coach decides. It's to execute what coach decides. We ran the play 4 times. It was successful 3 times. The 4th was obviously the last time.
I hated the design of it in hindsight.
Everybody says he could have bounced it.
Everybody was all clumped together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would have spread guys out. You know, I don't know anything. But that,
it didn't look like it had a shot at working.
Yeah, well, somebody blew it up. One of the defensive guys blew it up right away, and he had no place to go.
I would have pulled and drabbed. You can speak on this. I think he did the Tebow play one time where he faked like he was going to run, and then he threw to.
Well, it was like a little play action. But,
yeah.
I mean, if they don't run Cam Newton there at the end of the game and they don't win, people are going to go nuts and crucify Belichick for that. Because it was so successful.
Well, you could run them, but why don't you spread guys out a little bit? Everybody was all clumped up in the middle there.
I know, if you watch the breakdown of the play, it wasn't Bobby Wagner came through the middle, and the lead fullback had to bail out on his lead block to block Wagner, who was coming from behind.
So he busted the whole thing up.
How many of those last 4 plays before the end of that game did they throw the ball?
All of them, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, besides the last, besides the 4th.
He had a big one to Edelman. Just before that,
and they had no time.
It was a long drive.
Yeah. I was just wondering how many times they mixed it up. I didn't know how much time was on the clock.
It was a longevity drive. It was a long.
Well, look, that's just a big matchup. The Raiders Patriots is a big matchup this weekend.
What time is that?
I believe that's a 1 o'clock game.
So, of those two teams, who do you buy into more? Patriots are 1-1, so I didn't include them. Yes, I dissed the
Patriots.
I buy more of the Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, let's see.
They lost a squeaker in Seattle. I mean, I'm not going to ding them too much for that.
Right. They're right there.
Yep.
Right there.
All right, and last but not least, or maybe it is least, Blake Bortles gets a gig again.
I didn't realize he wasn't on a team. I saw that. I was shocked.
Yeah, he'll be in Denver now.
Well, they're desperate.
Drew Lock is banged up.
Yeah, they're desperate.
Right.
That could be your team with the number 1 overall pick.
Denver?
Very could be.
Yep.
They're my wild card team.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Wild card? Hey,
you know what? I have Minnesota winning the NFC North, so everybody's got a bad
pick. A lot of us do. A lot of us.
All right, coming up, we'll switch gears. We'll open up EB's entertainment page. Rolling Stone just came out with their top 500 albums of all time. We'll find out how many we can name in the top 10 next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.